Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Osiris.
Hello. What's going on? It's your pal, Karina Reichman, coming at you live from New York City, here with my dear pal, Isaac Sloan. Isaac, how you doing, dude?
Karina, I'm fantastic. It is, as you aforementioned, Rocktober now.
Baby, is it ever.
And it just feels like things are in full swing. I feel like all of these shows that we announced and were talking about couple of months ago, or even a few weeks ago, are just happening now. It's a
feels
wild
like
thing.
Everybody's on tour. You can't even figure out what to see on a given night because you have four options, five options, 10 options. It's just very, it's overwhelming in lots of ways, but it's fantastic. And it's really cool to see, you know, at long last, all of our favorite bands and just bands in general out doing the damn thing, which is incredible.
You know, I saw at Jazz Fest one year a shirt that said, judge your Jazz Fest not on the quality of music you saw, but the quality of music you had to skip in order to go see what you saw. And it feels that way in New York a lot of the time, that there are some tough choices that need to be made in order to, you know, give your attention to the evening calls for.
Big time. And I have a pal who has no tattoos but says that his first tattoo is going to be can't see them all. You know, and that just hits. That just hits. It's so true. You really can't see them all. We're prefacing this episode with all this because, you know, I think I will say personally, I made some questionable live music decisions over the weekend.
Well, I think it's, you say questionable, but I think we're going to get into, you know, what exactly that means.
Exactly. We are. And, you know, I think we need to debunk, demystify the concept of guilty pleasures. Because I feel like there's just pleasures, baby. But I'm a little bit guilty, let me tell you.
Well, let's start. Tell the listeners what you saw on Wednesday night.
That's a good call. Okay, last Wednesday, I saw two shows. I went from the Mercury Lounge here in New York City, famous small club in the East Village, and I saw a band from the UK called The Heavy Heavy that were fantastic, very OG, like, you know, early Eagles, Mamas and the Papas, like beautiful harmonies, you know, they had a bit of like a Richard and Linda Thompson vibe at times too. Very tight harmonies vocally. Felt like they stepped out of 1973. It was really a beautiful, beautiful thing. And yeah, I enjoyed the show quite a bit. And they're, you know, a young new band that's kind of happening and it's their first US tour. And I was delighted to be there and, catch him off rip. And then I made the pilgrimage to Williamsburg, to the Music Hall of Williamsburg, to see Cortex. And Cortex is dope. And unbeknownst to me, you know, I was on one balcony, but the other side of the balcony was roped off and there were only two people there. And their names were Tyler, the Creator, and Action Bronson. And I was like, that's really interesting. So Cortex is a French band from, you know, I want to say the 70s and 80s, maybe just the 80s. I'm not going to lie to you, but they're an older French band, and it's jazzy, it's funky, it's fusiony, it's weird at times. It's really interesting. So that was a super enjoyable night of music, and you know, very glad to have caught both bands, one new, one old, and you know, to see Tyler the Creator across the way taking it in too. It was a ravenous crowd for Cortex, so that was very, very cool. And then on Thursday, you and I saw a show together, Isaac, something we had been very much anticipating for 10 years.
That's right. No, the Mars Volta is on tour in the United States right now, which is a kind of an amazing thing. They're a little bit of an enigmatic act for a lot of reasons, despite there being so much lore around them. They kind of bridge progressive rock with a kind of more friendly alternative rock sound and heavy Latin music influences.
Big time. And heavy, heavy music
and
influences.
Heavy, heavy music influences. Absolutely. Not the heavy, heavy. No. But heavy music. And they have a new album out. It's their self-titled album, The Mars Volta. And, you know, I was totally mesmerized by this show in a way that I didn't really anticipate. You know, when you say heavy music, I expected to really feel it in the gut for the, you know, an entire hour and a half of a set. And instead, there were moments of that, but I was pretty in a cerebral state at this show and really kind of taken in and awed, but not hit over the head, which I really respect in a band like that.
In a big way. No, there were very meditative moments throughout that set, juxtaposed with the heavy, super technical, super hit in the gut, you know, stylings. It was kind of as good as bands get, in my opinion. I was shocked and awed, and not shocked because I knew that they were going to be good, but I had never seen them, and they sounded absolutely incredible. Cedric, the singer, you know, becomes almost operatic at times and hits these high notes and hits them with finesse and ease. It was pretty incredible, and I'm really glad we got to see that. Like, that was a really excellent thing to take in. And if the Mars World is coming to you, you should go see them.
Definitely.
I mean, geez.
Definitely. Well, you know, it's also an interesting thing about them is they've made what they do really popular. I mean, to sell out two nights at New York's Terminal 5 and to be a band with that kind of credibility. And I think there are a lot of bands out there that try to kind of attempt what they do. And, you know, not to say that they fail, but Mars Volta has really just kind of perfected the style that they play.
Big time, which is a feat because it's very hard to, you know, ascribe them a sound or, you know, a few buzzwords, even though we just tried to, you know what I mean? It's you know, it really crosses genres, and it's both meditative and jammy at times and extremely heavy at times and extremely Latin flared at times. It's really a very interesting thing, and they just, I feel like with their songs and their performance, they have kind of struck the right balance of all these things, and it's an amazing thing to watch that they've had such an incredible career over the past however many years. It's an amazing thing. And you saw them at Roseland 10 years ago, correct?
I saw them at Roseland 13 years ago.
13 years ago.
I was a freshman in high school, yes. And I saw them at the Roseland Ballroom, and they were one of the first bands that I like didn't play an encore, and they still don't. They don't, like, you know, I guess they just don't do that. But
yeah.
I remember like standing there like really wanting more, and the house lights coming on, and this very similar thing happened
sure. The
other night where, you know, people kind of insisted they would play one more song, and they just like left on a high note. But it's great to see them back in action, making new music. I really like the new record, and yeah, long live the Mars Volta.
For real, for real, for real. So that was great. And then next thing you know, it's Friday.
Yeah.
And then what happens on Friday, Isaac? I don't even know.
I took a day of rest.
I did too. I rehearsed with my band, which is, you know, obviously Mars Volta, Cortex, heavy, heavy, fueled which is great. So I didn't see any live music, but I played music with my band of brothers. And then the following day, we went on divergent paths here.
You returned to Terminal 5.
I did.
I think we should just get right into that.
All right, let's get right into it. So, you know, this is where, you know, Karina's decisions really became interesting ones. So, in New York City on Saturday night, some of my favorite bands were playing. We're talking Pavement. We're talking the Yeah Yeah Yeahs specifically. And, of course, up at the Beacon Theater, one of my favorite places to be, where my man Isaac was the Tedeschi Trucks Band for their annual residency. So all these things are very appealing to me, things that I like, things that I'm very much into. I've never seen Pavement. I love the AAS. They never play anymore. It's a whole thing. So with this in mind, there is a band. You know them. Maybe you don't. I think you might. They're called 311. And 311 is playing a two-night stand at Terminal 5, where we saw the Mars Volta just, you know, 2 days prior. And I'll tell you what, guys, I have such a soft spot for 311. It's almost certifiable. 311, you know, and they were playing these two classic records, right? They were playing their 1993 album entitled Music on Saturday, and they were playing their 1994 record Grassroots on Sunday. It is no small coincidence here that my boyfriend, Johnny, was the promoter on both of these shows and definitely told me when they were booked. I got very excited and let the record show I had never seen 311 ever. Very shockingly, because they played constantly for 30 years and they've put out records consistently for 30 years. Unbelievable. So all of these things just coalesced into me wanting to stay, you know, local in Manhattan and just go instead of going to the King's Theater that is rather far out in Brooklyn or going to Forest Hills Stadium to see both, you know, the Pavement and Yeah Yeah Yeahs respectively. I went to 56th Street in Manhattan to see 311. Boy, I really think this is like, you know, the musical equivalent of like, you know, like 311 is like my chicken fingers and fries, whereas, you know, the other two bands are like, you know, going to Jean George or like, you know, some five-star gourmet experience. And let me tell you, I enjoyed my chicken nuggets so much.
I think there's a real time and a place for that, and the time and place, 311, Terminal 5.
Dude.
I regret actually not going. You sent me a couple of videos. And, you know, for those who are thinking, I've never heard of 311 before, they are a band that has been taken apart by music fans, critics. You know, people just love to rip on this band.
Love to rip on them. Love to rip on them. You know, which I really understand. There's sort of a saccharine element to them that I think people find off-putting. But, you know, to me, it's very interesting because, you know, like, I grew up listening to a lot of heavy metal, a lot of heavy music, blah, blah, blah. And these guys have very heavy riffs and sensibilities. Of course, they have two MCs rapping over the heavy riffage, right? But I think they do it very well. And by well, I mean well like a chicken nugget, you know what I mean? Not well like, you know, the way Public Enemy does it well. Do you know what I'm saying? These are two different diametrically opposed concepts here. But man, it's positive. And I mean that in the sense of like, you know, a lot of the heavy music I listen to has very, you know, dark, anarchistic, whatever, undertones. Whereas 311 like has this sort of like positive like California vibe to it, even though they're from fucking, I think, Nebraska. Anyway, it's out of control. I had the best time, and there's something about it that just like, I'm watching them play. Peanut is the name of their bass player. Peanut is amazing. He really is a great player and has an incredible rig and a bass with a light-up fretboard, and I was just watching him the whole night being like, man, like, Peanut goes, dude. Peanut really gets it. And the crowd was going absolutely ballistic, which you just love to see, you know, people who, like, love this band that's, like, I don't want to call them marginalized. I think that's the wrong way of putting it because they're not, but whatever. But, like, it's a niche thing The people who love it absolutely love it. At one point, Nick Hexum, the singer, he got up there and he was just like, thank you to everybody who traveled to be here tonight. And the entire crowd erupted. So you get the sense that people came from far and wide to see them do these two records in their entireties. And one very interesting part, Isaac, before this becomes a 311 podcast, and, you know, I told you this in our real day-to-day lives, but they played two completely unique shows. And by that, I mean, you know, of course they did because they played these two separate albums over the course of two nights. But after they played their album set, they went into basically like, you know, a good, I want to say, seven tunes at least, you know, of greatest hits, you know. And there's a song called Down by 311, right? Probably arguably their most famous song. Only did Down one night. Amber, famous song. Only did Amber one night. I was very surprised. I was like, oh shit. Like, I would assume that they're playing Down every night. And guess what? Their song All Mixed Up, fucking fantastic song. They didn't play it at all. No All Mixed Up over the course of two nights. I could not believe it. So, you know, it's really kind of a remarkable thing. And by the way, the band is tight as hell. There's so much room to mess up in that band, and they never mess up. It's really shocking. They're like iron tight, and I was very impressed. And then of course Sunday rolls around, my boyfriend Johnny has to go back to like deal with settlement and like figure out, you know, whatever, and he's like, well, I have to go. And I was like, ah, twist my arm, why don't you, you know. And I, you know, just went with him, and I'm so glad I did. It was just fun as all hell. Yeah, so that's me admitting to the world my guilty pleasure. I love 311. I'm not ashamed, but I'm a little bit ashamed. And, you know, if you love something, go see it, man.
Well, I'm just glad to hear about it, honestly. Because it's really, you know, I mean, it's the whole not playing the same set list, playing classic albums, having fans fly in. You know, all of that stuff is cool to know about. And it's you know, interesting when a band a little bit off my radar you know, really whoops it up for two nights in New York City with all of that. It's just so cool.
Crazy. And walking out the first night, there was a group of people who recognized me, and they were like, oh my God, Corinna Reichman, you're a 311 fan? And I was like, yes, I am, baby. And they were like, you coming back tomorrow? And at that moment, I didn't think I would go back. And I was like, ah, you know, doubt it. But man, tonight was great, whatever. But it was just funny to be like recognized in such a different context and out myself in person being like, yes, I am a 311 fan, you know?
Well, no, and I think some of the best strains of that music has seeped its way into your music.
I couldn't agree more. And the sensibility of it, like, yeah, sort of heavy but positive, I think is really fun. And I'm such a lover of hardcore music that has so much of that in it as well, where, you know, I think that's great. It just does something for me. Just does.
Well, I was absolutely having the gourmet experience at the Tedeschi Trucks band at the Beacon.
Tell the people. Gosh. Tell them.
If you listen to this podcast, you probably know about the Tedeschi Trucks band. They are phenomenal. Susan Tedeschi, Derek Trucks, and their big band, many people in that band.
Very
two
big.
Two drummers, backup singers, horns. You know, it's become a staple in New York in the fall at the Beacon Theater. They tour all around the world at this point. And there's, I mean, I don't know of a band that's as good as them as a live band in the way that they do it, really.
It's pretty shocking.
I mean, it's kind of also par for the course to be hyperbolic about how good they are, I feel like.
Definitely, and I think people get into that element of it
that
in a big way.
Like, they are so good. But I drank the Kool-Aid. I love them.
They're incredible.
They are promoting their new album, I Am the Moon. And it's a four-part album, and they played all four parts over the course of the first four nights of their residency. I was there for one of the parts. I'm not sure which one because they didn't play them in order.
Sure.
But it was also a night of a lot of Derek and the Dominoes, Layla Assorted Other Love Songs. We got Why Does Love Got to Be So Sad? We got Key to the Highway, and I believe one other song from that record. That is an album that they did in full at the Lock-In Music Festival with Trey Anastasio from Fish on guitar. And it's great to hear those songs. My gosh, that's a super group with Dwayne Allman and Eric Clapton. And you know, I was listening to them play those songs, and I had this thought where I was like, wait, there's something about this album that's funny. And I realized, and this is, of course, a very novice realization, but it's assorted love songs.
Sure.
So the kind of thread is love, but it's a sort of assorted mix of different kinds of things.
I mean, you're damn right.
Which is an interesting way to collect songs onto an album.
Assorted love songs, man. Assorted love songs. You're absolutely right. Why does love got to be so sad? And why is this so funny? That's hilarious. Well, I mean, I'm so glad you could take that in. And of course, 2 days ago, Monday, was their 50th show at the Beacon Theater. And that is awesome for many, many reasons. And it's just so great in like sort of a post Allman Brothers band world to see Derek Trucks get to play with such an incredible band that everybody, you know, in the same way clamors over the tickets. It's, you know, the show starts before the show starts. The run starts before the run starts. Do you know what I mean? It's an all-encompassing, you know, however many shows, you know, which is a beautiful thing. And they brought out Yorma and Jack from, you know, from Hot Tuna. And it is the most, you know, if you don't know Yorma, you don't know Jack. What can you say? So
totally. Yeah, they did a, I guess, a surprise opening set.
So sick.
And then sat in with the band. And I am actually going back tomorrow to see Tedeschi Trucks Band again with Ruthie Foster opening. And
so sick.
I am just looking forward to it. It's a great thing to be under that roof with those musicians on the stage. And that spirit that you're talking about, very much alive on the Upper West Side in New York City.
You gotta love it. You gotta love it every time. And we'd be remiss, we just got to touch on the fact that Pavement hasn't played in years and years and years and years, but they came back and they did, I mean, they've done shows on both coasts at this point, but here in New York City, they did 4 nights at the King's Theater that was accompanied by a Pavement Museum, which they've been calling Pavement's 1933 to 2022. You know, just awesome pop-up shit going on with this band that accompanies the run, basically. And it went down kind of in Tribeca, 475 Greenwich Street. And, you know, it featured, you know, previously unseen imagery, artwork, ephemera, you know, and all different like relics of the band, both real and imaginary, I believe, right? They were like, you know, this is a piece of gum that Stephen Malcolmus chewed.
Yeah, I think they got really creative with what was in their pop-up museum. And it also included some performances.
It did, which is really, really cool, which featured bands like Snail Mail, Soccer Mommy, Bully, Speedy Ortiz, and you know, they all at the end of the day basically got together to perform a tune off Wowie Zowie, Grounded, which is just such a cool, I don't know, Pavement. Again, like, I am kicking myself for missing Pavement.
When you say such a cool, I feel it is too cool for me.
Too cool for you?
Actually.
Really?
I saw them in 2010 on mm-hmm. the last reunion. And I was like, this is awesome. I am not cool enough to be here.
You see, that's that exclusionary vibe that 311 does not have.
Right. I think I would feel more at home at a 311 show than a Pavement show.
I mean, let me tell you, you would have felt right at home, baby.
Not to say that I don't love Pavement's music, but I just had the thought of trekking out to the King's Theater and just being like, this is way too cool for me. I can't be here. And then trekking back to Manhattan in shame.
Fascinating. Fascinating. I understand, even though, like, you know, that music is so timeless and fantastic and a cornerstone of American indie rock and roll in every regard. And I love it with every fiber of my being. And without them, there would be so nothing that I like on so many levels, you know. And I really, you know, you got to hand it to that band for being so inventive, so interesting, so themselves. And
no,
having
yeah, absolutely.
People fall over themselves
group.
Trying to imitate it and never being able to. And, you know, I'm just so glad that they are back. And it's just really cool to see people, again, clamoring over the tickets 4 nights in a row. They have the pop-up, you know, shop, museum, whatever. It's all part of that thing that we love, where it's like the show starts before the show starts. It's an all-encompassing Pavement Palooza. Like, that is super fucking sick. So shout out to Pavement. Shout out to everyone who's there. You're way cooler than we are, and we salute you.
You're not cooler. I mean, Karina is. I feel like you rewrite the book in terms of that kind of thing.
Well, because I don't give a fuck how cool people think they are, because they're not. Nobody is. They could fuck right off. You know what I mean? If they think they're cooler than I Boogs over here, they're tripping. So, you know, that's just, it's all facade. It's made up.
Another cool person.
Yeah.
Billy Strings.
Probably the coolest, actually.
Just celebrated his 30th birthday.
Dude.
And we love Billy Strings on this podcast more than we even know how to joke about.
And it wouldn't be Inappropriate Happiness if we didn't have a Billy Strings section in the podcast. He had his 30th birthday in LA. They handed out hats at his own show that said Happy Birthday, Billy, which is fantastic. He made it rain. And that's not even, like, we don't even know, how do we even cover everything that Billy Strings has done in the last week? Like, it's out of control.
I don't know. I mean, he had this renewal fest in Buena Vista, Colorado, where he, like, played on a lake, a secret set. And I saw pictures from this. So many people go see this guy.
Dude, and people are, like, cold lamping in the lake, jamming out to bluegrass music, and Billy and his band, like, showed up on a boat. That looked so cool. Like, we stand this guy in a big way. and not for nothing, he just announced a new album, which is very, very exciting. And he calls it Me and Dad. And it's a gentleman named Terry Barber. Turns out to not be his biological father, but I just need to read this quote because it might be one of the greatest quotes I've ever read, right?
Please do, yeah.
It says, this is from Billy Strings to Rolling Stone. He says, Terry raised me and taught me how to wipe my ass, tie my shoes, and play guitar. That's my fucking dad. So shout out. I agree. That is your fucking dad. And I can't wait to hear this record. It's so exciting. I mean, this guy, Billy is, you know, he shits music at this point. It's unbelievable. And we just can't keep up with all the strides and moves and records. And, you know, there's pictures of him hugging Eddie Vedder from over the weekend. I was just like, oh, I got chills. Uh-oh. You know what I mean? Like, everything this guy does is art. And it's just amazing to be alive in a time where Billy Strings is turning 30, making big money moves. And, you know, we salute him.
We really do. I'm looking forward to seeing him in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, at the Met on this fall tour.
That is so sick, dude. He's playing the Met?
Yeah, two nights.
Oh,
tough ticket.
Oh, I bet it is.
It's great.
It's going to be a great place to see him. It's so great. Oh, my God. Well, that concludes my string segment of the podcast.
And I think that kind of puts a nice bow on today's episode.
I think it really does, Isaac. I really think it does. It's just such good stuff happening. It's incredible to see bands out there doing the thing. I, you know, couldn't be more thrilled to talk about it with you here. And for the record, I am I'm going on tour, guys. I'm going on tour. This weekend, I will be appearing at the Devil's Backbone Festival in Virginia, playing right after Corey Wong and before Corey Wong is Mr. Wives. And it seems to be a great little festival they got going on. I don't know because I've never been there, but man, people seem stoked about it. So see you there on Friday, Virginia. And on Saturday, I will be in Albrightsville, Pennsylvania, playing the Pine Ridge Fall Festival, where I am practically headlining. So, and by practically, I mean quite literally. So I can't believe that. I cannot wait to be there and look forward to it in a big way. And then I come home on Sunday, get my life together, and then on Monday at the crack of dawn, I take off to the West Coast for 2 weeks of tour, holding down bass duties with my man Marco Benevento, going, you know, from everywhere from San Diego to Seattle and everywhere in between. Tour starts on Tuesday at Pappy and Harriet's, which is very, very exciting. I have only, you know, been outside there. I've never seen a show there, but man, like, Joshua Tree vibes. There's a reason everybody fucking loves Joshua Tree because that place is friggin' dope. And I can't wait to take in all the desert vibes. Going to Palm Springs on night one. It's going to be like 100 degrees. Cannot wait. And see you everywhere. See you everywhere. Eugene, Portland, San Francisco, San Diego, LA. I'll be there for the next 2 weeks, which means I will be talking to my man Isaac through the telephonic airwaves every week for the podcast, which will be, you know, its own level of interesting and exciting.
I'm excited to hear about your escapades on tour. I'm also excited to hold down here in New York.
Which I know you will, with great finesse.
And we also want to thank RJB.
Dude, RJB, always coming in hot with the good, good emails. Especially today, we got a very secret, dope email from RJ. Cannot wait to tell you all about it in November.
I also cannot wait to get an email that says, "You're set. Reservation is confirmed. Three people for 7:30 dinner tonight." With our man, RJB, on copy.
Dude, and it's probably going to be at the 58th Street Blue Ribbon. I don't know why, but it will be. And we can't wait to go out to dinner with you, RJ. It is the running joke of the podcast. We love it, baby. And I'd be remiss to not mention that I am going on headlining tour in December. And tickets are on sale now. You should get them while they're hot. We're talking Albany. We're talking, oh my God, we're talking all this stuff. We're talking Pembroke, Massachusetts. We're talking Burlington, Vermont.
Connecticut,
Portland, Maine, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and Washington, D.C. I think I hit them all. And cannot wait. Just go to KarinaReichman.com/tour. Grab your tickets. It helps us greatly when you grab them early, and I cannot wait to put on some very exciting shows this December. So that's what we got, man, and that's does that round it all out? What else you got, Isaac? What else is hot on the set?
You know, just in the spirit of you can't see them all, we can't talk about them all.
You can't talk about them all.
But we will talk with you next week.
Yes, we will. Bye-bye, everyone. Have a wonderful week.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I never learned to Osiris.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.